Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Secure AF podcast, the podcast about all things cybersecurity. My name is Todd Wadle, and I'm the Director of Communications here at Alias, and with me is Jonathan Kemet, our CISO. Yep. Say hi.
Hi. Hi, everybody.
And today we're going to talk about a topic that is really needed but often not discussed, and that is data inventory, why it's important, what it is, and how to do it. And so, Jonathan, why don't you start off just telling us why data inventory? Like, why are we having this podcast?
Well, I guess the real reason is because we've had a fair amount of incidents in the last couple of months. And this is a problem that's been happening a lot, but in the last couple of months, it's really come to a head for several clients. And it was specifically about what data was on computers that were compromised during a ransomware event or a cyber attack. And the question has really come up of when an attacker gets into an organization and either they get on a box, a server, a workstation, whatever it is, or they encrypt something. One of the things you have to know is what data was on there. Now, you need to know for a couple of different reasons. Number one, you need to know what you have to do to recover it, you know, but you also need to know if there was data that might fall under a scope, such as HIPAA, GDPR, PCI, whatever it may be, so that you can do the appropriate procedures in terms of breach notification processes. So that sort of thing is really... It's not a new issue, though. I mean, this is something that we've been dealing with in the industry for many, many years. But it really comes to a point now that when you go into an organization, whether it be incident response or an audit or an investigator for a problem, they're going to ask, where is this data? What data was on the server? And if you don't know... That's really a problem, because if you don't know, here's an example. Let's say you have a server that is has been compromised, and there's a possibility that there was a student information on this server. And I'm just using students as an example, since I come from higher education. But if you can't prove the limit of student data on that server, then you kind of have to assume all your student data was on that server. And that's a huge problem, because let's say you think that student data could have been on this server from 1999 to 2022, but you don't know which records were actually on there. Well, for an abundance of caution, most of the regulators and law enforcement or investigators are going to make you assume that it's every student record. Mm-hmm. There may have only been five, but you don't know which five those are. So you have to assume there could have been every student record, could be hundreds of thousands of records on this server, and you have to do breach notifications because of it. So that's really why this is a problem, along with the fact that you need to know where your data is.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about an incident, when we're talking about an attack, you've got to know where the data is and what data is on these servers, because if you don't, that becomes a real problem.
Well, and it seems that also becomes a PR problem, in the sense of, it's one thing to tell a client or a student or someone your data was exposed, and we know that, and here's what you can do about it. It's actually quite disquieting, and I've gotten the communication that says your data may have been exposed, maybe because we don't know what was on the server.
Yes.
Well, of course, I want to take the remediation actions that I need to, but it is actually, in a sense, I'd almost rather know it was exposed and I take this action and this is going to protect me, as opposed to maybe it was exposed.
Right.
And it's not exactly comforting to have a company or an organization tell you, we're not really sure what data we had, because what other data may have been on there.
Right.
Where else, if you don't know that your data was on there, where else might you have it in the organization that you also don't know? And that becomes, one, I would think, an IT problem and a cybersecurity problem, but also from a business perspective, a PR problem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's really this issue of, when we're talking about data inventories, traditionally when we talked about data inventories, It was from a regulation point of view. The regulations tell you, you need to know what records you have. And that regulation might be the GDPR, it might be HIPAA, it might be a whole variety of sectorial laws. But the knowing where your data is at provides a couple different things. Number one, if you know where your data is at, you can protect that data. If you know where your data is at, then you can answer questions about that data, what you have on a data subject, on a person. But you're absolutely right. If you have a data breach and they send you a note saying, well, your data may have been involved, that may mean that they really don't have a clue. Now, if they don't have a clue where the data was, how do you know they were deploying the correct security controls on that data? Now, the reality is, if they've been hit by a cyber attack and that server or workstation or whatever was involved and it got hit, they probably weren't deploying the right the security controls in the first place.
Right.
Now, I mean, that's a really hard thing to say because every incident is different and every piece is different in, you know, in terms of how it happens and why it happens. But from an end user, it doesn't really matter because my data was affected.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my data has been involved in several breaches. OPM was one of them. And there's been several others. And my question is always, why didn't they protect that data? Mm-hmm. Why didn't they protect my personal data that they kept, that they took from me? And in the case of OPM, they actually did take it from me. In some cases, you know, I had to fill out the forms. Other cases, they were taking information and, you know, writing down, you know, physical things and everything because, you know, you're trying to do a job for law enforcement or whatever, or military, which is a lot of records out there where they take information from you. So that's not data that, I mean, I even really truly understood they had. I mean, I know what I filled out on the forms, but they probably had a whole bunch more data, you know, about me.
And I think that's one of the questions is if they don't know where the data is, do they also know what data that they had on you?
Exactly.
And that becomes a concern of, well, maybe you have data that I didn't know and that you really shouldn't have had, but now you can't even tell me whether or not you had a certain type of data.
Yes.
And that seems to be a sort of a cascading problem.
It is, absolutely. And organizations are data hoarders. I've been in lots of different organizations. My previous organization, when I worked there, I would help other organizations as I could. And then now I've got lots of different clients, or we have lots of different clients that we work with. But I have a lot of clients or prospective clients who come in and I start asking data privacy questions. And they'll tell me they've got data that goes back 40, 50 years. And one of the questions is, why? Why do you have that data? And many times they say, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I'm talking with IT people or IT security people. They don't know. But when you have data that old, you're also talking about this might be microfiche. It might be paper copies. It might be, you know, in some format that mm-hmm. you can't read, such as jazz drives, if you guys remember what jazz drives were, or zip drives, what those were all those years ago. Even though you may not be able to read that data because you don't have the equipment for it, you're still responsible for that data. You still have to find that data. I remember the story that this was probably 15 years ago now. And it was right on that edge of tape versus disk backup. And people were converting from the old tape drives over to some sort of spinning disk backup, whether that was a NAS or online backup or something. And this organization had changed and they had moved from tape backup over to kind of a more modern version of backups. And they had to go to court. They had what they claimed was a document retention policy that stated that they only keep data for X amount of months. Let's say 6 months. I don't know the actual time. I don't remember that part, but let's say it's 6 months. And the emails that the court wanted were actually much older than that. So the organization went to court and says, well, our policy says this, and this is what we have our backups. But somebody on the prosecuting side said that they had inside information is what it was, but they said, no, they've got tape backups stuck in a closet somewhere. So the judge questioned them and they says, do you have tape backups? Well, they had to be honest. They said, well, we do have tapes, but we don't have the jukebox to read them anymore. And the judge was actually kind of angry with them. I was like, wait a minute. You said that your policy states 6 months, and yet you have all these documents or all this data space from years ago. You need to figure out a way to read those tapes. They had to go to eBay and buy a jukebox to be able to read these tapes. And the judge basically questioned a couple different things. Question number one, their own policies, because if they're not following their policies on one thing, are they going to follow their policies on other stuff? Right. But number two, the judge or the court wanted those files to determine what was happening. So they had to, on their own money, by the way, since they had, I don't want to say they lied to the court. They were mistaken to the court, but the court made them, you have an obligation to provide this data to the court. They had to go buy the jukebox, get the equipment, get it set up, read all those tapes and look through. And they found the emails.
Oh, man.
So, I mean, document retention policy is really, really important. Now, we're talking about document retention, not necessarily PII or data inventory, but that is really, really important because if you're not following your own policies, you can get caught like that. So, as we're talking about data, if you have really old data, you probably need to consider your own document retention or your data retention policy to make sure you're allowed to have that data.
Well, and I think that brought up something really important that even when we were talking about this podcast, I hear data inventory and I think all electronic. But then I was thinking, you know, our guys will do physical pen tests. And sometimes a part of that is sort of a what information can we get access to? And they were at, I think it was a hospital.
Yeah.
And there's a file cabinet. And they're, of course, checking our file cabinet's secure. And they open a drawer and there are medical records going back 5, 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
That are in an unlocked, unsecure cabinet in it was an unsecure space. I think it was supposed to be secure. And it's like, well, okay, somebody could walk in, grab a couple of file boxes, and walk out with 10 years of people's PII, which wasn't, I don't know if it's backed up anywhere, but at the very least, they could get that.
I've got one better for you. So this happened up in Tulsa.
Okay.
And it was a small medical office of some kind that shut down, and the new owners of the office building or the suite of rooms, they found all these records, and so they decided to they knew they were medical records. They didn't know what to do with them because this was not a medical, you know, the new people weren't medical, they weren't a hospital or a treatment or anything. And so they decide they were going to hire a shredding company to come and pick up all the stuff and take it away and shred it. Now, this was many years ago, by the way. So this guy comes up in a truck, loads all these boxes in the back of his truck and takes off down the road. And all these boxes now open up.
And stuff just goes flying.
And all this paper just goes up in the air. So there was a lot of problems with that story, and I may not be remembering all the pieces of the story exactly, but that was the gist of it. Somebody was driving down the road, these medical records were in the back of the truck, and they went flying. One of the things to keep in mind was the people who were otherwise in charge of those medical records were still responsible for them.
Yeah.
Even though they had quit, they had up and left, they're still responsible for, you know, that constant, you know, the protection of that data. They should have destroyed it appropriately or maintained it or whatever. So there was a lot of problems with that. When, I mean, number one, picking up on 169, you know, on the road, that's a big problem. But the fact that they didn't take care of them and actually, you know, destroy them appropriately or store them appropriately or whatever. So, yeah, that's a... that's a major issue. I remember doing a HIPAA audit, and we were finding records that were 10, 15, 20 years old. The problem with that is you're only supposed to keep them for a certain amount of time. And every regulation is different, whether you're dealing with HIPAA or GDPR, FERPA, or if you have an ongoing relationship, you know, there's all kinds of different things that can affect it. But if you're keeping a record longer than you should, whether it's physical or electronic, that's problematic. You know, we talk about the data lifecycle, or I talk about the data lifecycle when I'm teaching this stuff. In fact, as we're recording this, we're about to do a lunch and learn about data inventories. And one of the pieces is the data lifecycle. And the data lifecycle, there's four parts to it. The first one is, how do you receive data? So how do you get that data in, whether it's physical copy, electronic format, over the phone, in email, whatever. So how does data come into the organization? How does the data get stored? So are you storing it in a room? Are you storing it on a server? Are you storing it on a local PC, whatever it is? How does the data get used and by whom? So you could, you're only supposed to use data a certain way. So if you, let's say you get a patient data, say HIPAA, you get that patient data, you're getting it for treatment, you're doing it for a doctor. But then the foundation comes in and says, hey, we want a list of all the patients so that we can send them a request for money. Well, that's problematic because you didn't collect the data for donor services. You collected the data for treatment. So if you use it inappropriately, that's a problem. And then the last thing, or the last one, the fourth, is how do you destroy data? How do you, you know, take those paper copies and you shred them appropriately? How do you, you, from a technology point of view, shred electronic files? So all those things are something you have to take into consideration. Now, you take those four pieces. How does it come in? How do you store it? Who uses it? And how do you destroy it? Those are the pieces that actually we deal with on a daily basis of security. How do you secure how data comes in? How do you secure the storage of it? How do you secure the use of it? How do you secure the destruction of it? So the data lifecycle is actually a really simple framework to think about how you do security in the organization. So many organizations don't break that down, but that is a basis of how I do data inventories, is start with the data lifecycle and then work from there.
Because my guess would be that some companies think about maybe one or two out of the four, but not necessarily all four. So they might have security. They may think our data is secure because we have a secure way that we get it. We have a secure way maybe that we get rid of it.
Yeah.
But are you secure in who accesses it? How? Yeah. Are they authorized? And if so, what are they authorized to do with that data? Because, I mean, we hand over a lot of data. And I would want to know, does this company, is it secure? Is it going to get rid of? But also those other two are really key. Like, who's actually looking at this? Is it securely stored? And I think that's one of those things that, that the security piece is, who's looking at my data? Like, I'm giving it to the company or organization. I don't get to say, well, now who's... they may have transparency, or I may need to have to sign off on that, but in most cases, it's not... Well, that's not transparent.
And I think that that's why we have so many privacy laws coming out and trying to build up that transparency. So one of the things you just said is, you know, who is accessing my data? And the reality is most compliance laws talk about the only people that can access the data or the people that have a specific business need to access the data. Some organizations try to cheat and they say, well, everybody in the organization has a right, has a need to access this data. The cleaning crew? Why does the cleaning crew need to have access? Why does the maintenance man need to have access? So that whole who has access can be problematic for organizations because it is only allowed to be for the people who need to have that access to provide that service or to do whatever. Here's a perfect example that I like using. This comes from a friend of mine. He told me the story about how a doctor, and I may have said this on the podcast previously, but a doctor who was looking at medical records of patients who was not his patients. So he was looking at records right before he was moving from one hospital to another hospital, you know, doctors like moving, you know, more money or whatever. So before he left, he looked at a whole bunch of patient records just happened to be celebrities from this hospital. He looked at this and left, well, under HIPAA, access to data is should be tightly controlled. And if someone accesses data, then somebody needs to review that. Well, so they did. They reviewed and they saw that this doctor had accessed these records. And so they had to do an HHS or OCR report saying this doctor inappropriately accessed these records. Turned out, eventually, this doctor lost his license to practice medicine because he had accessed medical records that were not his patients. He did not have a right to do it. He had the access to do it, but he didn't have the authority to do it. Mm-hmm. So that's really important. So now, you know, and that's one of the big things of GDPR and a few other ones that when we're talking about access to data, it is for a very specific reason. You have a need to do it. If someone doesn't have a need to do that, then they're really not supposed to. And so a lot of the requirements for auditing the access to data really stems from that. If someone is going to access that record or that file inappropriately, then the organization needs to know about it and be able to do something about it. If they can't do that, if they can't monitor, they're actually in violation of those compliances, so the ones that do require it. So, and that can be really hard. How do you monitor someone's access to a paper copy?
Right.
How do you monitor someone's access to a document that's on, you know, well, SharePoint is actually pretty simple.
Right.
But old file shares aren't, you know, just an old fashioned mapped drive of a server share. It's really hard to determine who has access to things, but by the new compliances, you have to, that is when you have to do that.
Well, and something that, I mean, this is just thinking about how it plays into all of your security. We've gotten into a penetration test and found, you know, an open printer, which isn't usually that big of a deal.
Yeah, right.
Except it was at a hospital and the printer setting, it was also a scanner.
Yeah.
And it kept all of the scans in memory, accessible memory for, I actually don't remember. I don't know that we actually figured it out. And I mean, there were pages of Social Security cards, Medicaid cards, patient records, just once you access the printer.
Yeah.
All of that was available. And so that becomes like, at what level does that security happen? Well, it happens all the way down. Like, where is this data? And I mean, that would be the, how is this data coming in?
Yes.
Okay, fine. You scan it in. Is the printer saving those scans? Is the
process secure? Yeah, yeah.
Well, if so, you don't want that happening at all. But, you know, it'd be easy to say, I mean, that'd be so easy to overlook.
Oh, yes,
we scanned it. I didn't think to check how long does it keep it.
And it is because, I mean, auditors will come in and I'll do it too. If I can, let's say I go into a hospital and I can, from the guest network or the public production network, whatever it is, if I can see that printer and that printer has HIPAA data on it or there's data that flows through it, then I'm going to raise a red flag saying, no, that's a HIPAA device that needs to be on your HIPAA network, and I should not be able to see it, you know, from a regular production network or a guest network. Now, the reality is that's network segmentation. You
right.
divide
right.
out the networks, you know, among the different purposes and organization. And that can be really difficult to do. I mean, you have to really think about, okay, this device, this printer, as an example, could have HIPAA data. Now, the thing about it is printers nowadays, the drives should be encrypted, but in some printers, you can go into the web interface and so reprint. So it's while it's encrypted on the drive, the software, you still have access
to it. We have run into that as well.
Right. So you still, if that data resides on that printer or flows through the printer, then you have to treat that with special things. And that is actually what the data inventory is all about. Because if you think about the data lifecycle, that's one and two. So how does the data come in where you're scanning it? How does it get stored? Let's get stored on the drive. So you take those two pieces, you have to secure it. You have to know that printer is possibility of HIPAA data in this example. That has a possibility of HIPAA data. So we have to put those extra controls on it, whether it's network segmentation, whether it's multi-factor authentication, whether it's securing down the printer's main screen, whatever it is, you know, whatever your controls you have to implement, you have to do that. Well, if IT doesn't know that printer may have HIPAA,
right,
they don't know how, they don't know that they need to deploy security controls to it. So all these things that we're talking about really does actually fall right back into, do you know where your data is at? Do you have a data inventory? If you can't list me all of the printers that are under scope for HIPAA, mm-hmm. or under scope for PCI or GLBA or GDPR or FERPA, or pick your list of letters and put them together, and you have a compliance of some kind, then they always talk about you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
I understand that. However, you're still responsible for that.
Right.
So you can't use that as an excuse anymore. You have to know that data is on there, near there, around there, going to there, or something, and then you have to implement the right controls around it. So if you don't have the ability to be able to go, oh yeah, that printer is it. Now, what I like doing, keep it simple. Name them. Mm-hmm. Have a mm-hmm. naming scheme. This printer, you see it on the network, or someone walks up to it and go, oh, this is a HIPAA printer.
Right.
We have to treat this. We used to do that with paycheck printers, mm-hmm. you know, the check printers, very special ink, very special paper, whatever. But when we saw one of those check printers, it was like, oh, this is white glove. No one touches it. There was two people that were allowed to touch it because, number one, it was very expensive paper and very expensive ink. But number two,
you could just print paychecks.
You could just print a check out to yourself. Well, now it's coming to the point of, the protections you deploy for that should be the same protections you deploy for any sort of the other data. And that's why we care about data inventories.
It's interesting thing about sort of the far end. So how does it come in? But also what happens in the case of a breach? And I was just talking to one of our forensic examiners, and he said, I told him this is the topic of the podcast. And I said, oh, do you want to step in? And he said, I would only have one thing to say, which is when you get breached, you don't want me to have to take the time to figure out what data there is.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you think about the timeline of an incident response, that's not the time to figure out for us first to understand what was on the drive so that then we can decide, or you can decide, where remediation needs to happen. Yeah. Because if it does have that data, we need to start there. If it doesn't have that data, we can be someplace else.
Yes.
And so it seems that's really key, is on the front end, making sure it's secure, but then also on the back end, it could be really difficult for you in an incident to know.
Yeah. If we have to build the data inventory after the incident has happened and everything is encrypted, that's a bad day. I mean, that is the worst case scenario for an organization, is trying to build a data inventory after the fact. After everything is encrypted, after everything, because you just don't know what's there. We've had to go through that with several different organizations where you had to go back afterward. And I'll tell you, first question I ask when I get on the phone during the incident, what was on this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was files. What was the files? Well, we don't know. Okay. What's the worst case scenario of what these files were? And they were like, well, I mean, there was X, Y, and Z. How many records are we talking about? Well, we don't know. What's worst case scenario? He goes, millions. That's a bad day.
Yeah.
That is a long. So my part in that at that point is actually, okay, we need general counsel involved because they're the ones that's going to handle that part of it. I will help you on the technical piece. I'll help you on the policies piece. I'll help you on the controls piece. I will help the lawyers understand the technical requirements, but it's the lawyers who are going to decide what the next steps are. It could be that they decide, like, all right, well, since you can't tell me, then you need to assume every record you ever had was on this server. And if you think about it, let's say it's $250 per record. That's a general number that comes out from the industry. $250 per record that you will be spending on some sort of breach notification or remediation of some kind. Well, if you have five records, okay, that's no big deal. What if you have 500,000? What if you have 1 million, 10 million, 30 million? $250 a record.
That's up real fast.
Yeah, it's that will bankrupt organizations. all because they didn't know.
Well, plus the potential for a class action lawsuit.
Oh, absolutely.
You didn't protect my data, so you've got the, here's what you required, and then, by the way, we're all going to see because you didn't secure my data when you should have.
Now, here's another one. So we're seeing two different things really happen in the industry right now as in terms of the attackers. Number one, they are not encrypting the target, so they're just getting the data and running, but you don't know what data they got.
Right.
They're just saying, hey, we got data. They could have gotten anything, or they could have gotten everything. So it could be a bluff or it could not be. But the attackers are also reaching out to the individual users. So now the attackers are reaching out to the victims and saying, hey, we worked with this organization. They're not going to pay us. We have your data. If you want us to delete your data, give us some money. Well, the whole idea of the class action where in court, I'm not a lawyer. Like I'm just saying, I am not a lawyer. But in a lot of times when you're dealing with court, there has to be harm. Mm-hmm. So you have to, if you're suing someone or even if there's criminal action or whatever, usually there has to be some sort of harm involved to the individual. Well, in a data breach, it's really hard to attribute harm to that data breach. Because if the attackers don't release the data in a way to show, hey, it's coming from this organization, this is when we took it and you're in it, then it can be really hard. So if you just find the data out on the dark net, out on some merchant site, you may not know where it came from. But if the attacker is reaching out to the individual users now, now that's direct attribution that the data was stolen by this attacker from this organization. And since you're being extorted for money, that's a crime. So that's direct harm. Now, that could mean a lot of different things, and I don't want to get into that because, again, I'm not a lawyer. I am not a lawyer. I'm going to say that three times. I am not a lawyer, just for good measure. But that's one of those things that if every single person who received those emails, which when I looked at one of the data breaches, there was about 4.6 million lines in the merchant site, I mean, individual records. Now, some of them were duplicative, understood, but there's 4.6 million. So 4.6 million records at $50 a piece is what the attackers were asking for. Turn that around, and if every one of those 4.6 million people, let's say 4 million, whatever, sues the original organization to get their money back, I mean, that's millions of court cases. That's millions of dollars of repayment, you know, 200 million, something like that. That's a lot of money. But the attackers who are not getting paid by the organization are reaching out to the individuals because they think they're going to get paid or they hope they're going to get paid.
Right. And as an individual, you don't know, right?
Yeah.
So do they have the information? Is it what they say it is?
Yeah.
And then also, okay, I'm going to pitch $50 to a ransomware group.
Yeah.
Are they really going to delete my data?
Right.
Is this still out there? Have they already resold it?
Yeah.
So I would definitely be upset enough to go after the company.
Oh, absolutely.
And say, okay, well, there's this $50, but also now I paid for credit monitoring. I did XYZ. So now I've added these extra costs on.
Because of the harm.
Because of the harm. I really have to be reimbursed for that too. So it could be more than $50.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, we live in the world of the attackers, you know, because of the job that we do here, here at Alias. So we kind of get that you pay the attackers, they may not delete your data, or they might, you know, who knows. But there's a risk there, and we understand those risks. But for somebody who is not in the industry, all they know is the attackers are reaching out saying, hey, give us $50 and we'll delete your data. They don't know how to evaluate that risk. They can't do a risk assessment on that, determine if that's really real or not. Then we might have the attackers who say, well, just give us your credit card number. We'll take it out for you. And then they drain the account. I mean, there's so many different attacks. To stop that part, you know, from an industry point of view, we have to protect the data. And again, going back to the whole intent of this episode is data inventories. If you don't know the data you have, then you can't protect that data. If you don't protect that data, now we have this issue of the ransomwares have gotten it. Now they're extorting people. Now there's going to be lawsuits. The other thing to keep in mind, and this is something that people really don't like to hear, if you manage a system, if you are the decision maker of those systems, you are responsible for what happens on those systems. You can be held accountable and liable for those systems. When that came out a couple of years ago, there was some letters, there's all kinds of different things. But when that came out, that individual decision makers, it's basically corporate liability for individual accountability for corporate wrongdoing is what the memo was called. But it's the individual. So let's say you are a system administrator who's managing a system who decides not to put on a patch. Because that patch was not put on, the machine got compromised, the data left that machine. You, that system administrator, could be held civilly and criminally liable for not putting industry standard controls on that machine. Now, I don't know of any system administrator or any sort of computer position out there that went in to computers thinking about that sort of liability. But the reality is we have more data on people than we've ever had in history. We have data that we have collected from people, that we have generated for people. And if we don't protect it, people could die. Now, I use that in my presentations all the time. And I ask the question, have people ever died because of a data breach? And the reality is yes. Many, many, many people have died because of data breaches. All the way from, the Edward Snowden, you've got the Ashley Madison, you've got the Holocaust, which we can go into that history sometime about the use of the data by the Nazis to track down Jewish families and kill them. I mean, there is historical references to data breaches leading to the deaths of many, many people. Most people is like, we lost the data.
Right.
Most organizations are. But can't do that anymore. You can't do that. And we're seeing that in the industry. We're seeing that in regulations. They're telling us the regulations that are out there. There is on April 7th of 2024, a new legislation has been introduced. It's the American Privacy Rights Act. The APRA, I think that's what the name of it is. It is new privacy legislation, a lot like GDPR in the EU, but it's for the United States. It's out for discussion right now. Of course, it takes time because it's got to go through discussion and, changes and then get put through Congress and put through Senate, all these different things. But there's a lot of pieces to having a central privacy law in the U.S. We already have a lot of states that have individual privacy laws. And then, of course, we have secretarial laws. We have HIPAA and FERPA and GLBA and all these different ones that are protecting certain kinds of data in certain instances. What they're trying to do is come up with a one law to rule them all, like GDPR, and say, okay, let's standardize everything, standard control instead of 50 different states. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm supportive of that because it's easier for organizations to have one law to meet than it has to 50 different laws to meet. And I'm generally a supporter of privacy laws as it relates to things like GDPR. So I think those sorts of things are coming, and it is making it more of a requirement organizations to maintain their data correctly, the security of their data, but also just knowing what data they have. And then otherwise using the tools that they have have at their disposal for security to protect that data. I always talk about how security and privacy, those two industries overlap a lot, like a Venn diagram. And there's only a very small edge piece that doesn't. But the way I explain it is privacy tells you the data that you can have, and then security protects that data. If you have a bunch of data you're not supposed to have, it's really hard to
protect it,
to secure it. So let's get rid of the data you don't need to have, and then let's secure that data really well. You talked about earlier, which I didn't want to forget to mention, was who has data? Where is the data at? One of the things for transparency laws, and I like bringing this up because usually, you know, I'll get a few shocks on this. Bring your own devices. This is very, very common right now. Bring your own device. Bring your own laptop. Bring your own phone, whatever. Well, if you have a bring your own device policy, again, we have to think about data inventories. If you're allowing personal data of your clients, of your customers, whatever, to go onto a personal device, whether it's a personal laptop or personal phone, personal network, whatever, by transparency laws, you really should state that in your privacy policy that you provide to the end user, or tell people when they give you your data that you will be allowing people to take this data and put it on their personal devices. Now, I will ask this in conferences. So, you know, when I'm speaking, it's like, how many people here want to tell the customer that you're allowing their personal data to go home on a personal phone? And they're like, I don't want to say that. But yet you have your own, bring your own device. Right. So again, going back to the data inventory, where is the data stored? If the data is stored on personal devices, that needs to be in your inventory. That generally needs to be in your policies that you provide to the end user, telling them where you're going to store their data. So that's something you have to take in consideration. I encourage organizations not to have bring your own device. If you have bring your own device, you need to have good mobile device management. Make sure you have a good enclave of the data, the security around the data that's on the device, where it can't go off. You can't screenshot it. You can't upload it to iCloud. You can't do all these different things, because you want to, if the data is going to go on there, you want to have security around that. Mm-hmm. If you're storing the data, data lifecycle, storing the data, you got to wrap security controls around that. But the first step is knowing the data is going out there. If you don't know data is going there, you don't have a data inventory, then there's no possible way you can deploy the right security controls around that data.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan, I think this has been great talking about why data inventories matter. We haven't gotten to, and we don't have time on this podcast, to talk about how you actually do one.
Yes.
So that will be an upcoming podcast. If you enjoyed this, or if you now feel the need to know about the data inventory, on a future podcast, we will be covering what that is, actually how to walk through that. So be tuning in for that, and be tuning in for other podcasts as we talk about other topics related to cybersecurity. So thank you, Jonathan.
Yep, absolutely. Today.
And we hope to see you on next episode of the Secure AF podcast.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.